think there's added pressure on Black females, especially in the Marine Corps, because they expect you to be loud, they expect you to be angry, they expect you to be quote-unquote ghetto, you know, and I'm just me.
Welcome to another episode of Sit Rep, the official DVS podcast. I'm your host, U.S. Army combat veteran, Greg Williams. Let's hear from Amber Patton, a voice actress and Marine Corps veteran.
As a woman, you already have to fight, you know, from being called a walking mattress and all these other derogatory terms. And then you're Black, so they're already like looking at you like you're just gonna be angry all the time. And, you know, it was just like, I'm gonna be myself. If you don't like it, then fine. I never went in with the thought like, oh my gosh, I'm a Black female Marine, they're gonna treat me a certain way. And I was like, no, I earned every bit of rank that I received. I worked my butt off. You're not gonna treat me any less than this. I was ready to go a year before I actually got out.
Okay, there had to be that one make it or break it event. What I guess just stomp the camel in the hump.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say.
You can say it. You can say it.
Well, it was a moment where my CO decided to lie on me and tried to get me demoted. And it was so childish. It was so sad. And I was just like, yeah, I don't want to be in this kind of Corps. It stemmed all from his own bias. Like, there was another Marine that came in, officer, who may or may not have been a lesbian, because it's during the don't ask, don't tell time, you know. But because she didn't dress feminine enough she didn't present feminine enough, he immediately disliked her. And he was trying to get her fired or what have you. And so her and I built a rapport, and he tried to use that to get her fired. And so it was like, just be like, yeah, it was a mess. I never intended to be a lifer. I always went in with the idea that I was going to get out. So at one point it was like, well, maybe if I switch MOSs, I'll be a little happier and I could see this going long term. But once that happened, I was like, yeah, nope, I'm going to get NJP'd. I got to get out.
Getting into the whole transitioning as an African-American female veteran, what were some of the, like, give me a story where, oh, wow, I can kind of use this veteran, you know, to my advantage, and I'm an African-American female. Like, did you feel like you had a leg up on African-American, you know, females just regular in society as civilians, or do you feel you have that leg up now?
You know, no. I never felt like that. Huh. I never even thought about it like that. Like, oh, well, I've got this card to play just in case. I never thought about it that way. Maybe more so in the job market, because they only see you on a piece of paper first. So it's like you highlight the fact that you're a veteran on there. But also, my name is Amber Patton. Nobody's going to look at that name and go, yeah, she's Black. Like, we don't, you know, we're going to discriminate against this one. So, I never felt like, you know, oh, let me just put that veteran status on there and, you know, gotcha. No, I never really felt like that. I actually kind of hated talking about it for a while. I didn't want that to be the first thing people knew about me. I always wanted it to be something people learned if we were going to become friends, because then it becomes the only thing they talk about when we're having a conversation. And sometimes it felt like they would accept me once they found out I was a veteran. But before that, I was just another Black female. So if you're cool with me just being a Black female, then yeah, you deserve to know that I was a veteran and that I served. But we're not going to use that as a jump off point to be like, oh, well, she's cool now. But being a Black female, it's like those are a set of its own challenges. When they find out you're a veteran, they tend to treat you a little bit better, honestly, because they're like, oh, you did something different. Look at you. And you kind of have to shrug it off sometimes a little bit. But yeah, like just being a black female, being out after transitioning, you know, they don't expect the veteran aspect of it. They don't expect that for me to have served honorably. They definitely don't expect it when I tell them that I got out as a sergeant. They're like, oh, what? Wow, that's impressive. Like, how did you manage to do that? I did my damn job. That's how I did it. So it always has that connotation of like, oh, you're different. You're not like the others. I'm like, no, we're all one. We're not a monolith. We do different stuff. You know, all these news stories about black folks getting shot by police. And, you know, I was very vocal about that on my social media after I got out. Then I would have these Marines making these real nasty comments, and they seem to expect me to put my uniform before my race. And I was very confused by that, because it's like, I could take that uniform off and nobody would know that I was ever in the Marine Corps. I can't take my skin off. That is just who I am. I am a black woman. What am I gonna do? Bleach it green? No. It's not going to happen. My skin is who I am. It's a part of me. It's who I am. I was raised as a black woman. I was raised by a black woman, a black village. We just black. It's not like, I don't compartmentalize that part of myself. Like, you're crazy. So I lost a lot of military friends because it became this, like, I don't know. It became a source of contention, and it was like, wow, I had no idea you were that racist. Awesome, great, good to know that if I was in a firefight with you, I don't know if I could actually really trust you. That's disheartening. Yeah, for me personally, it's like, yes, once a Marine, always a Marine, but I am a black female Marine. Black female Marine, in that order. Like, that's it. You don't, it doesn't, Marine, black female, no, black female Marine. And I don't think that those things should be moved around. Like, it's just not gonna happen. Me going into the Marine Corps was a choice. And it's now, you know, looking back on it, it's a choice I would make again. Absolutely, but you're not going to make me choose that over my whole entire essence, my being. And yeah, it was a lot of, I stopped doing it, but it was a lot of arguing with idiots about that. And as I was like, oh, you're a veteran. You're supposed to uphold the country and da 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 da. I was like, yeah, but also as a veteran, I'm allowed to criticize when it's wrong. It's not one way to look at anything. So, yeah. Black first, always.
We're judged so much to sometimes, I'm not going to give you extra ammunition to add to your ignorance, okay? Because sometimes people say things to you to get a reaction. And my goal is not to react every time somebody say something, and you're not going to say something to me so you can add to what you think a way of an African-American woman would carry herself. So I almost try to think, when I come encounter with individuals like that, I'm not going to give you the satisfaction, because they say things to you to provoke you so that they can say, oh, I told you she'll be the angry black woman, or I told you she'll do this, or I told you to do that. So sometimes you get a pass, and it's not because of you. It's because I'm not going to give you feed into your ignorance. So because of that, I have to walk around constantly making sure I watch what I say, watch what I do, watch what I wear, when I shouldn't have to do that.
This is Jonna Williams, a U.S. Air Force veteran.
When individuals sign up for the military, you feel like you're there to serve your country. You're building a sister and brotherhood, and the individuals that are training you will always have your back. So my narrative will be me kind of forced, not really forced out of the military, but my first base just wasn't a good base. So I was being discriminated against. So I actually felt like I wasn't doing my due diligence by not being able to fulfill my military term, because I was kind of forced out by some individuals who probably shouldn't have been in the military. I can talk about some of it. When I served, I was your star airman. From the time I went into basic training, I was an element leader. I played in a band at basic training. I went to tech school. I was a rope leader. So I was just your star airman. My first base, I was dorm president. I won airman of the quarter. I was wing president. And then one time I had a situation, but I had this chief that just harassed me all the time. But this one particular situation, he came up to me and he was like, "Oh, I need you to sit down." It's, they had a staff sergeant who was due for her promotion and she hadn't been making rank. So he says, "I just need you to sit down. We need her to win this next award." At that time, like I said, I was dorm president. So me and the wing commander was close, but what I thought was close, come to find out, doesn't matter how close you think you are at people, there's other tables that you don't sit at. So basically when I expressed my concern to him, I just opened up a can of stuff that I shouldn't have opened up. We have in the Air Force something called CEU, sort of like on the outside, CEU credits that you have to take. I've never made below a 90 on any test or any the course test. So the first harassment came when they started failing me on my tests. So basically I would go take my tests. Someone would come change the test scores like I didn't pass it. Then the next one came, they reached out my cell phone. I was late on my cell phone bill. They took my stripe. They were saying that I wasn't fit for my job, wanted to reclassify me to admin. So I actually followed my full chain. I went to my group commander. They didn't help me. I went to my wing commander. They didn't help me. I went to the IG, because the IG does exist in the military. They didn't help me. And all it did was just made it worse for me, because at the end of the day, they're all friends. We're not. We're airmen. We don't hang out at the senior NCO club or the officer club with these individuals. So even though they're not working in the same capacity or the same workspace, they're friends. So in turn, you can do whatever you want and it still doesn't help you. And I'm living proof. I'm not saying every case is that situation, but in my particular situation, I used my chain of command. It didn't help. Make a long story short, it was either reclassify or get out. I chose get out. I mean, now that I'm older, would I have chose to get out? No, I would have chose reclassify and kind of fought back. But at that time, I was going through a lot of discrimination. That was just one story, and I just gave up. Like, I didn't want to fight anymore, but I feel like there was ways to fight, and I should have stayed in and fought, and so that I could have got what's owed to me. I didn't get my honorable discharge. It gave me general under honorable conditions. So, and then on top of that, they took my GI Bill, because if you don't have an honorable discharge, they take your GI Bill from you and you actually pay into your GI Bill. They take, you know, the old school way. Now you don't pay it, but when I was in, we paid into our GI Bill for the first year. They took my GI Bill from me. So that was another reason that I felt like a failure and just felt like I was shortchanged, and not because I wasn't a star airman or something that I did, but just because I didn't go along with their rules. I did receive justice because I didn't let it go. Like, once I got through my depression and getting out of my head, I actually went back and fought for my discharge upgrade, and I won. Okay. Winning a discharge upgrade is like 2% chance of you upgrading a discharge. So not only did I win, they gave me back my GI Bill and they gave me the discharge that I deserved, because they were actually, when they discriminated against me, they were sloppy. The records didn't match up because my supervisor never gave me a bad EPR. My test results, I never scored below a 90, because they didn't. So you have to take four books, and then at the end of the four you take an end of course. So all my four books always had A's, but it was the end of the course that they had me fail. So there was a lot of loopholes that they were sloppy on and they didn't cross, that kind of, when I went to meet, and I actually met the board myself, I represented myself, I didn't hire anybody, I drove to Andrews Air Force Base and met a board of a five-member board, which is it's made up of, I think, four military, two civilians, and they come and they decide if you should win and get your discharge upgrade. So I actually won because, you know, the facts were there and it wasn't he say, she say. Yes, did I get, I think, what is it, 12 years later, did I get what was owed to me? Yes, but it took 12 years. And I used my chain of command when I was in service, and all it did was hurt me even more.
I remember before I went off to boot camp, my dad told me, he would say, listen, you know, if you're running and you look to your left and you see your white female counterpart running next to you and y'all neck and neck, you push extra harder. You push yourself extra. You always have to be better. You always have to do more. You always have to be the best at whatever you're doing.
This is Monique Rada, a DVS employee and U.S. Navy veteran.
So I got promoted in boot camp. So I was afforded the opportunity to take the test. And I remember it was this assumption that, you know, when the test time was coming, the unit was really excited. It was only maybe two women in the unit, but it was, the guys were really excited for the next level of men taking the test and, you know, amping them up and totally supportive. And no one really said anything to me. You know, it was just like kind of tossed me to the side. And when it came out and I actually made rank, there was like a buzz, a conversation, and some people who they assumed would make the rank didn't. It was assumed that I did something to make that rank, which is impossible. Like, I don't know how you can flirt your way, sex your way to making rank in the military. You're taking a test. That test is being sent to Pensacola at the time. That's what it was in Florida. And it's being graded and then it's being disseminated based on, you know, how well you did. And also in conjunction with your eval. I don't know, but it's just an assumption that I did something to make the rank. I couldn't possibly just know my job. That couldn't have been the answer. I remember asking my leadership, particularly a rank ahead of me at the time, an E6, to stay around a little longer. I had to work late, stay around a little longer because I'm uncomfortable with the chief and he's making these suggestions and he's trying to get rid of everybody out the unit to kind of like leave work early except for me. And I felt really comfortable. I remember literally begging them to stay because I felt so uncomfortable with this chief and what he was asking of me. I remember even hearing a sailor say like, hey, I'm racist and I don't care. It's where I'm from. You know, and he was from New York, but I think upstate New York at the time. And so I guess that was okay. It's like people feel comfortable thinking that they can say whatever they want because you're in the military and you're part of this brotherhood or this greater calling, that you don't have an identity outside of that. You know, you're just supposed to suck it up and keep it moving. You're not supposed to complain, because if you complain, you're considered weak. There was a time even with, I just remember having conflicts where one of the sailors took out a knife out on me and called me a nigger and said, you know, I don't like black people and I don't like dealing with you, you know, and pulled a knife on me. And it was just like, no one said nothing. The sailor didn't get in trouble. Nothing happened to him. It was just supposed to be assumed that I'm just supposed to suck it up. I probably said something that I deserved it. And, you know, it is what it is. So I think that I have more, but I just rather not continue to share. Yeah. Okay. That's a little, you know, too much. it's just like, you know, you bring up stuff. Like, you know, as I'm talking, I'm thinking about these real, like, because this is real life. You know, these are real threads and real pieces of a fabric of a quilt of my experience in the military. So I'm just thinking about those feelings and what I felt like during those times, you know, feeling helpless or hopeless and feeling like just totally not able to stand up for myself. I naturally do that. I'm a natural advocate. I naturally like to speak for the underdog. And when you are the underdog and you feel helpless because you're in the military, this powerful institution where you can't step out of the black line, you can't step out and do and advocate for yourself the way you would want to. It's life changing, to say the least. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm a veteran. I love my country. I love that I served. It doesn't mean that I am taking away from that. I'm only speaking what is true. We wouldn't have this increase in this talk of MST, military sexual trauma. We wouldn't have these kind of conversations about racism within the military, racism within the ranks, these different things, these disparities within promotions and things like that, if it wasn't true. It's just a light is being shed on it. So I'm only speaking about something that's just not a one rare incident. It's something that happens, and we have to be aware. And how you be aware is by putting a light, shedding a light to a dark place. It's a bad light. It's a dirty stain in a unit to have that kind of report that being reported out. So you're kind of just nudged and encouraged to not speak on it, or to pretty much dust it off, because it's just a part of the process. Like, you guys want equal rights, right? You guys want to do everything a man can do, so suck it up and deal with it, right? There's hazing all over, so deal with it. You know what I mean? It's kind of like that attitude that I think hinders people from speaking out. Us Black women, we gotta be careful out here, you know? We're women, we're Black. So there's already something said about that. There's already some stereotypes. There's some things that the public history has already put out there against us. So we have to advocate for ourselves. We have to just shed light and speak our truth unapologetically, like I expect every woman to do.
That wraps it up for this episode. I'm your host, U.S. Army combat veteran Greg Williams. This episode was produced and edited by Gil Feliciano. Tune in for more Sit Rep next week.